Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's finally finished his latest book on bollocks. It's Richard Herring! First draft, it's only the first draft. Hello, my fan friends, and welcome... Oh, I've just lost my page. I can't do without the book. Welcome to another edition of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. But I was talking to Johnny Five from Short Circuit. He says it wouldn't be cheating, by the way. He said I shouldn't feel bad about it. So what happened is fine between the two of us. I also was talking to Ben Jabatui from Short Circuit as well. He was there too. What was he up to? I don't want to go. Didn't talk to him. What was, you know, that character, Fisher? What's his face? Anyway, Johnny Five calls it Rahalastapa. So we're going to... That's fine. Going to... Right, yeah, I finished my book. That's done. It's all right, isn't it? That'll be out in October or something. So buy that. We'll see how it goes. It's nice to get that over with. I have been thinking a lot. A couple of weeks ago, in the last 2 weeks, I revealed that my son had woken me up at 6:30 in the morning to ask me if ghosts have bum holes, and been thinking about it. I didn't know what to say. It was a good thing to wake up to, and it's quite a good question to have. I mean, they probably do, right? But a ghost is just an apparition and a shadow of things that once were, unless the ghost has no clothes on, the lower half. And I've never heard of a naked ghost, even though loads of people must die. Now, I presume when you're a ghost, you're wearing... That's what Ghost, the TV series, is. Whatever you're wearing at the time, that's what you wear, isn't it? And but in the they presumably they can't take their clothes off once they're dead. So in essence, they only have the things that you can see. They're see-through, aren't they, ghosts? So they don't have any internal organs. So one can assume they don't have any internal organs. So they probably don't have bum holes, unless you can see their. But if we need to see a ghost with its bum out, to finally answer this question. Also, they don't use their bum holes, unless I suppose they were doing a poo when they died, and it's sort of hanging out of their ghost bum. Again, I've never heard, you'd think you that would have happened, and no one ever says, I saw a ghost with a turd hanging out the back of it. Why not? Lots of people must have died like that. Elvis. Anyway, thought about it a lot. Let me also say at this point, I have to thank some people who backed the Kickstarter. And thank you to Rob Hughes, who says to me, thank you for introducing me to pub and club comedy nights all those years ago in Brighton. That's code. That's all right, Rob. Don't tell the wife. And the Kings of Wessex Fast Maths Alumni Group. I was part of the Kings of Wessex Fast Maths. I did maths in a year and pure maths in the next year. So, you know, I can't remember any maths at all, but no, I was very clever. Or Calphamag, as the nerdy kids call it. Special sub-mention to those who also survived the Hugh Sexy 4-H experience. Now, it's difficult to explain to people who didn't go to my school what the Hugh Sexy 4-H experience is. I'm not quite sure. There was two middle schools that fed into the Kings of Wessex school. This is where I went to school, so someone from Cheddar. There was Fairlands Middle School, which I went to, and there was a school called Hugh Sexy's Middle School, which you can imagine. I mean, got no... Actually, surprisingly little humour out of that. Imagine having a school called Hugh Sexy in this day and age. Where'd you go? Oh, yeah, go to Hugh Sexy. Yeah, I'm 10 years old. Yeah, what's wrong with that? Yeah, we all have to have sex with the teachers. That's like... Anyway, Fairlands rules, Hugh Sexy as shit. That's all I'm going to say. I'll tell you this one. I was going to save this till next week, but I can't wait to tell you. Another thing from my son. He's a good source of comedy. He's actually better than a bollock for a comedy. That's the thing. If you grow them for long enough, kids start to pay you back eventually. This is good. We drove to London Zoo this week, and on the drive down, my wife was listening to Gina Yashere's audiobook, and she said, oh, should I put it on? Said, yeah, and she put it on, and Gina Yashere was just saying fuck every 2 minutes, and the kids were in the back. So we explained to the kids that they, you know, there are some bad words and the kids shouldn't repeat them, but the comedians often say bad words. And Ernie said, I like comedians, and I felt pleased about that. You know, I thought, I know how much he looks up to me. So I said, I'm a comedian, I told him. He said, no, you're not. I said, I am. He said, you can't change colour. It's pretty good, isn't it? Pretty good. He didn't even know he'd done it. He didn't even know it was a joke. So let's crack on. I think we can crack on. Let's not mess around. We've got a good guest. I can mess around a lot when we've got rubbish guests, but when we've got good ones, I should shut up. My guest this week is probably best known for writing, as I am best known for as well, for writing on an unknown episodes of Up to Something, the 1989 sketch show, starring Mike Haley. I think Shane Ritchie was in it. David Schneider was in it. Up to Something. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome Armando Iannucci? Here he is. It's Armando Iannucci. Up to Something. Do you remember Up to Something?
No, I think some pre-written material from college days got used in that. But I remember the show,
yes.
But I never remember watching it.
So, I don't think I watched it. Dave Schneider rang me up.
Yeah.
And he got his big TV break and said, can I do that stuff you did about magicians? Can I do that?
Okay, yes. And he asked me about my Shakespeare sketch.
So he just got some of our stuff on. Yeah, I made 50 quid or something.
Oh, great.
I was very happy.
Yeah. Very pleased. Small acorns.
And at that point, our TV CVs were exactly the same. If you looked at IMDb at that point, you go, wow, those two exactly equal.
Right up to, but not including Alan Partridge.
Yeah.
I just listening to your son cackle on there.
Yeah.
If he knows his Milton,
Milton
describes the angels as having bottoms.
Does he?
Because he describes angel farts.
Right.
He talks about the angels eating normal food, and he talks about matter from corporeal to incorporeal turn. So the angels turn the solid matter into gas and expel it.
And does it smell nice or horrible?
We don't know. We just don't know.
We just don't know.
But science hasn't got that part.
I mean, it's not. I don't think you can call an angel a ghost, though. I mean,
I know. I know I was massively generalising and sort of quite offensively saying that angels were just like ghosts, where in fact they're two separate cultures, basically.
Well, angels, I've been reading a book about the anatomy of God by Dr. Francesca Stavrakopoulou. Okay. And God had a dad and he had 69 brothers. And that's possibly what angels are the 69 brothers of God, who then sort of knocked off his dad and became the main one.
And is this true?
Well, I mean, it's how much of anything we've said so far is true. I mean, I think up to something existed.
Right, okay.
But I think after that...
Although, as I say, I've never seen it, so...
We can't be sure.
It may not, you know, it may just be entirely fictional. Yes.
May not. So, yeah, that's good. Well, look, it's been unbelievably 4 years since you've been here, Amanda.
Yeah.
And you've managed to do a bit of stuff in the last 4 years. Well done. Given two of them were, you know, locked down, you've done pretty well. I've just been watching today again, which I did watch at the time, Avenue 5, which I think like it's interesting because I think out of it must be difficult when you've got like the pedigree of shows that you have. When a new show comes out, everyone's kind of judges it very quickly, right?
In relation to the previous one.
And I feel like maybe Avenue 5, like a little bit, people went, I'm not sure.
It's not got politics.
Yeah. I'm not sure
it's
this
in
is...
space. But, never done that before.
It's really good.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And again, you've sort of managed to predict the future in your work, which you seem to do an awful lot, in that it's basically a lockdown...
It's
comedy
a lockdown.
Written before lockdown.
It went out during lockdown, but it was about people being trapped on a space cruise liner meant for 8 weeks, but something goes wrong, so they're stuck up there for 8 years. And it went out the week that all the cruise liners were trapped in Japanese ports and things like that, you know.
Yeah. It's
I'm not saying I am responsible for COVID as part of some publicity push.
It feels like it.
I'm not saying that.
I feel like, you know...
And I don't want anyone to think that.
You might not be doing it on purpose, but I think you might have some kind of power to... So a lot of the thick of it things came true, didn't they? I think we talked about that last time. And this has sort of come true.
Mm-hmm.
But I was watching today the few of the middle episodes. It's sort of very much of... It's about truth and about how people... aren't really able to believe anything anymore.
Or people believe only what they want to believe.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so there's a very, very funny scene where some of the passengers decide it's all a hoax
and go out,
but then just can keep going out, even though they've seen people.
One lot of people go out the airlock and just explode in space. Someone else says, no, that's just visual effects. done very badly. So some more people go out and explode. Yeah. And then they go, okay, anybody else want to go out? And then more people go out. Yeah. And that went out the week that people were demanding in America to go into department stores that were shut because of COVID. They were all just kind of shouting and demanding to go in. Yeah.
I mean, it's very, you know, it's very true. I mean, obviously that was in the air, that idea of people not believing, knowing what to believe.
Yes, yes.
And choosing to believe.
And it's very, it's very Trumpian. And of course... Since then, we've had the whole, Biden didn't win the election hoax thing that's suddenly become a kind of, it's talked about so much that people, you know, half of America believes it.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you think, and I just sort of wonder about that as a political ploy, is it not... Do you think that can work? Because if you start...
Do you think
it can work in the long term?
Yes, I think it can.
Do you think it can?
Yes. I'm just going to keep saying yes.
Yeah, okay.
It can. And then it will work. Because I think that is... I think... I know this is a comedy podcast.
No, it's fine. We can be...
But I fear that in the next 2 or 3 years, if we don't get it right, we will see the end of democracy, truth, and the planet.
Yeah. In that order?
In that order,
okay,
yes.
One
will lead to the another.
Yeah.
In that, you know, we're already seeing what's going on in the misinformation in Russia. That seems to be working within Russia.
Yeah.
We may well end up with, if not Trump, someone like Trump saying, Democrats are not patriots, and therefore, you know, any election that they purport to have won, they haven't.
Yeah.
That's not true. And that coming into effect. And then the America pulling out of all the climate change agreements and consequently the end of the world.
But then that's sort of not working out in the long term, is it, for Trump? if the world ends, then yes. That's he's sort of lost.
Yes, I think the point is that he doesn't think the world will end.
Okay.
Yeah.
But also, you know, just sort of think if you create this group of people who are that mad and who'll believe whatever they're told, then that can easily be turned against you, though, surely. In some
well, way. Yes, but it seems to be that actually it's infectious and that, no, I think part of the problem is that, you know, whatever we see on our screens now, we sort of don't quite trust, whether it's on the BBC or whether it's on some website, because it all kind of looks roughly the same. You know, it's possible to construct stuff that looks legit, even though it's someone in Macedonia in a bedroom kind of compiling it. It looks a bit like the Washington Post, but it isn't.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the problem. So that it's become more difficult for us to be able to distinguish between what's factual and what isn't, what's fictional. You know.
So, no, we're fucked then.
We are fucked, so.
Do you think, I was going to ask you, you know, like obviously in the Ukraine, a comedian's become the president and, you know, it hasn't gone that great. But he's turned out to be very good in the awful situation that he's ended up in.
Thankfully not doing comedy, but actually doing the job that he was elected for.
But do you think we should do the same here? You would be a good person I would nominate to be the Prime Minister.
The Prime Minister. Of which party?
Well, you could be your own. You could be your own party. Well, he's his own party, isn't he?
Yeah.
So my
problem
party.
Is, you know, the closer I've come to observing politics, the more I realise how odd these people are. You have to be odd to think that that you are the best person to run the country. I mean, there is something odd about that.
Yeah.
And in order to get to that job, you will happily join a party and agree with everything that the leader says until you become the leader. I mean, there's already a number of kind of compromises you have to make to get to. I don't think I would get that far.
But then, you know, he started up his own party and like 70% of Ukraine voted for him. So like it's, you know, because he did that TV show, didn't he?
And but we have a system in the UK where you can't do that. You can't start a party and it take off. You know, the closest we've come is UKIP. But they never got one MP.
Yeah.
You know, they got influence over the whole debate on Europe. But it was David Cameron being scared of UKIP that caused the referendum.
Yeah.
But UKIP didn't actually get more than one MP.
No.
And then after the referendum, they didn't get any MPs. And then, you know, Nigel Farage starts a different party every week now just to get on whatever panel. Have you ever had him on here or have you?
Not yet.
No?
Not yet.
He's very funny. He's very...
He's only got one testicle.
Did you know that?
He had testicular cancer. So,
oh, really?
I am doing a podcast where I interview people with one testicle.
Are you?
Yeah, so I could have him on that. But he's quite scathing about the NHS, I believe. I think he was quite annoyed at the NHS. I was quite pleased they saved my life, but he's annoyed.
He's a bit annoyed that they saved your life.
Yeah. He's annoyed about me, No, we haven't had... I was saying backstage, I met him on this week, and I couldn't even really look him in the eye or talk to him, but he had a very... There was an unpleasant...
I've heard...
Fart around him.
There was... To use the technical. No, I have heard. But, I mean, obviously, for legal reasons, we can't say that he's, you know, a cunt. But I've heard... All I can say, there have been allegations.
Yeah, there have definitely been.
Unproven, I'm
but,
sure.
But, you know, he is the most... He's possibly... Even though he wasn't elected... Well, he's elected as the European Parliament, wasn't he? But he's probably the most successful politician of the 21st century in the UK.
So far, yes. Yes.
So,
we did predict in Time Trumpet that David Cameron, who was the Prime Minister at the time, would do something so awful he was never seen again. But we never specified what it was. And behold.
That's pretty incredible. Well, let's talk about lockdown.
Yes.
How was your lockdown?
Well, I think like everyone, it it was, you know, good bits and bad bits, really.
Yeah.
The start of it coincided with my having already scheduled to take some time off because I just finished doing Avenue 5.
Sure.
And David Copperfield had come out, so it was quite busy. So I was going to take some time off, and then lockdown happened. So it was sort of, I didn't feel like I'd suddenly been stopped in my tracks. But, you know, as with, you know, my mum passed away very early on in lockdown, not from COVID. You know, she was 93. But I think a lot of people like my mum who had dementia just shut down suddenly without the contact, without understanding why no one was coming to visit. Yeah. You know, that was hard. And, you know, we had the very sparse funeral. At the time the parties were happening in, just to remind you that I haven't forgotten about the parties. The parties were happening in number 10 because they were working very hard.
Yeah.
Unlike us, because we weren't working. We weren't working.
We were working so hard there wasn't time to party if
there wasn't time
in the
to
NHS.
Party.
So, you know, it's fair enough. They're working very hard. Oh, no, they had a little bit of time to party.
I remember passing hospitals where there was a big party going on in all the wards, and surgeons were going, we've got 5 people on ventilators today. Let's have some wine. And, they were working. Yeah, they were. So, and it was quite, it was okay for the consultants and the nurses to sort of have parties because they were working flat out. So that's, I think it's acceptable. If you're working flat out, you have a party.
Yeah.
under a great deal of pressure. So, so that was happening. And then we started writing Avenue 5 season 2, but it was very difficult because it was all on Zoom, and I kind of like, you know, I like people in the room, and I just like to be able to bounce off people. This is the first time, actually, I've been in front of people with naked faces. This is...
they're very anti-mask, my fans. Yeah. There's one, I've got one of them. Come on, what's wrong with you? Take your mask off! Be like the rest of us!
What's wrong with my face? Have it! There is full, just for listeners, there's full facial nudity in this theatre.
Yeah.
So there was that, and so that was tricky. We started filming Avenue 5. I've so lost track of the years as well. Now, when was it? 2020? At the end of 2020, we lasted for about 2 weeks because COVID was just getting in the way that we shut down after 2 weeks. And I decided that actually we wouldn't start again until September of last year. So we had quite a long gap then,
And you wrote, of course, your...
I wrote a poem.
A mock epic poem.
Yes.
Pandemonium.
Which wasn't planned. You know, it sort of spilled out. During lockdown, I think a lot of people took up hobbies like, you know, knitting and sourdough and learning Italian and stuff. And I didn't do any of that. But I did sort of fiddle about with words and stuff. And then this poem started really... just for my own kind of therapy, in a way. I didn't plan it to be... I didn't know where it was going. I didn't plan it to turn into something. I didn't plan to publish it or anything. It just grew. And occasionally... And it would come quite quickly for a bit. And then after about 50 lines, I'd put it away. And maybe a whole month would go by. And then I'd pull it out and write a bit more and put it away. So over the course of the year, it just grew, really.
And it's quite... I mean, it's very... It is funny, but it's, you know, it's, there's a lot of pain and anger in there. It's quite painful to read just to be reminded of the stuff that happened.
I wanted to do something that sort of encapsulated, I think, what we all went through, which was, you know, the highs and the lows and the fury sometimes of just watching what was happening on the television and the press conferences and, you know, decisions being made very late on in the day and multi-billion-dollar contracts going to friends of friends of friends and all that. And so there was that public thing that I think connected us all, really. And yet the private thing that every individual person or family, you know, or household went through privately. And I wanted to try and do something that connected. So it wasn't really a summing up. It was just more a kind of attempt to try and articulate what was going on, all the sort of mixed emotions, I suppose.
I mean, it almost feels like, you know, there could be, I mean, it could, I mean, it could keep going on. You could be adding to it all the time.
I think I will. We're possibly doing a stage version of it later this year.
And
it was written before the parties emerged. So yeah. I will have to go back and do a whole new kind of supplement.
I mean, it really does. It lends itself to, yeah, I was still thinking maybe an animation of it, but yeah, a stage version. Because there's so many wonderful, like all the people who were going for the contract sort of become this amorphous mass.
The circle
of
friends, and, yes. And it's like a vision of hell because it's a whole clump of people who are all kind of feeding off each other and kind of knowing each other inside out. They're all knotted together in a big kind of incestuous mound of friendship and connections. there's things like that, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's really good. It's, you know, it's a lovely small, short
book. It's a small,
book,
short book.
Which I love.
Yes.
Because I've read it twice, so there you go, it's good.
So
might read it again.
Yeah, I've read it twice as well, yeah.
And so when you were writing Avenue 5 by Zoom,
yes.
Did you find you were being informed now by the lockdown because did it sort of become part,
well, some of the themes that, you know, that we're all, it was already about, you know, what is leadership, and the whole idea was, you know, I've always loved sci-fi, but it's not really about aliens and it's not Star Trek. It's really just, what happens if 6,000 people are stuck together for a long time and just basically have to start again in terms of what are the rules, who's in charge, what does leadership mean, how do we educate people? So it's really a kind of social thing. And therefore, and those questions were bubbling along anyway, and you know, how easy is it to believe stuff that is clearly not true? What is leadership anyway? And all of that, really. So it sort of did feed into the second series. Yeah.
And well, it's a bit like Voyager, right? You know, the Star Trek Voyager, which is about a starship that gets abandoned.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Beamed across, and they're trying to travel home. So it's sort of a similar-ish idea, but with where they make their journey much longer rather than cutting time off.
It's exactly that. In fact, we've just stolen that.
Right.
And put some gags in.
But it's nice that science.
Yeah.
Well, get 7 of 9 in and I'll definitely keep watching. and it's a lot of because it's a team thing.
Yeah.
I
kind of like working with a big cast and an ensemble.
Yeah. But it's a lot of the people who work on Succession, right? So there's a couple.
Oh, some of the writers. Yeah, yes. Some of the writers. That's right. Yeah. Because they originally worked on Think of It and Veep. And
So did Veep sort of lead to the door opening for Succession? Do you think that's...
It did, in terms of HBO, because Veep was the first thing HBO did that was actually... It was very British-based in terms of we all wrote it here and we shot it in Baltimore, but we edited it here. The directors were all based here. And so the kind of the actual production office starts here. And it kind of gave them confidence to start doing more stuff based in the UK, really.
Yeah, terrific. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Right, I'm going to ask you some emergency questions, and then I'm going to talk about...
We got to that point already where...
No, I just thought, because otherwise I'll just whisker everything and we won't have done any. I was going to ask about ghost bumholes, we've covered that. do you think the photo that will be used in your obituary has been taken yet? what do you think it is?
I think the photo will be me driving into the Kremlin with suspect devices running.
Yeah, but we don't know what you might do in the future. I think it's interesting. I'm sure there will be a photo of you, but I think with you, it'll be a whole page with you if it's a broadsheet, I think. And there'll be a picture of, like, there'll be pictures of the things you've created. But, what, you know, it's difficult to work out.
There'll be things. I'll be like my face, and it'll be like at the centre of a spider's web. Yeah, well, so it'll you know, Partridge, yeah. Malcolm, the in the thick of it, they'll say, yeah. Rather than the thick of it. You know, the Alan Partridge show, they'll say.
You know? But, you know, your obituary could be just a photo of Steve Coogan. That's... And everyone will go, oh, no, Steve Coogan! Oh,
there'll be some incorrect ones. There'll be Brass Eye, Tony Farino, and stuff. Succession.
I hope it hasn't been taken yet. I hope it's you as a very old man.
Sent a chill through my soul, that has.
All right, this one might do as well. We were talking about butterflies the other week and the way that a caterpillar goes into a pupa and melts and then turns into a butterfly. If you could enter a pupa and melt and come out as anything you wanted, it could be you, or it could be someone else, or it could be anything.
Yeah.
What would you like to come out of?
I think Steve Coogan.
Yeah. Would it be Steve Coogan now or Steve Coogan, a young Steve
Coogan? A young Steve Coogan.
So you could enjoy...
Fresh. You know, just about to kind of embark on the whole Partridge.
So would you have done the WH Smith's adverts already? Or would that'd still be behind.
But the whole hacked off kind of campaign with Hugh Grant will still be ahead.
Yeah, that's still
ahead.
To come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What a life that would be to relive. It would be fantastic.
But he'd have my voice. Yeah. But if he had my voice his entire career as a very skilled and talented impressionist,
yes,
lodged him, would be gone, wouldn't it? Because it would just be me going,
yeah.
Hello, I'm Roddy Corbett. Hello, I'm Jeremy Paxman. Hi, hello. hi, do you know who I am? I'm Dame Judi Dench. Can't you tell from the way I'm behaving?
Yeah, it'd be an interesting.
It's me. You could, if you shut your eyes, you've smelled Judi Dench. Go on, try it. See. Shut your eyes.
I'm doing it.
Smell me.
Yeah, it is Judi Dench. It is Judi Dench. That's the thing with the chrysalis. That's the danger. It's like the Twilight Zone chrysalis. So you wish for something.
But you could come out. If a laboratory assistant had put a kind of pin or a Smartie in the Petri dish at the same time. Yeah. You could come out as a massive Smartie.
Yeah. Get the M&M gig, wouldn't you? Then you'd be on the adverts for that. Yeah. That would work out. Could work out.
But it's not a life. I mean, you know, after the M&M gig, then what? M&M tribute kind of.
Do you think
gig?
That would the, if people ate a bit of you, would it grow back again, do you think, if you were an M&M person?
Or they turn into it.
They could turn into it.
So it's infectious. It's infectious. We'd have to take tests. We'd have to. I think I'm coming down with the massive M&M disease. I don't think I should go into work today.
Yeah, but it'd be so delicious, people wouldn't be able to resist. Even they knew what was going to happen, they'd go, I still have to eat
so
a bit of
that. Huge as well. And you'd be banned from schools because it's bad for the, you know, they've got to have a healthy diet and stuff.
True.
But you could hang outside schools. it wouldn't be odd. It wouldn't be odd, because it's just M&M's.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think this is a film idea we could do together?
Oh. Film is so old school.
How is it? Okay.
This is a Netflix 10 one-hour episodes, 6 season. I've got the whole arc mapped out, 6 season. Oh yeah.
I think we talked about it last time, but you had that idea about Donald Trump in a bunker and being told that there'd been a nuclear. Was he being told there'd been a nuclear war, but there hadn't been? Well, that was just a tweet you had that nearly came.
The premise was he thinks he's governing, but in fact a whole replica White House has been built.
Yeah.
And he's been shoved inside it, while actually America's governed properly. And he must never know. But a fortune is spent on an alternative Senate and rallies and everything. And I just tweeted that. I think I was in a doctor's waiting room a bit more. I tweeted it. At the end of the day, I had 12 offers from major American studios.
Well, you wait till after this podcast has aired. Yes. The M&M. It's going to go through the roof.
Yeah.
It's going to be amazing. I'm going to ask you a new emergency question. It's sort of new. Mm-hmm. If you could own and live in any building in the world, they would give it to you, where would you choose to...
Again, I think I'd probably go into the Kremlin.
Yeah.
With a suspect device strapped to my waist and take it from there.
Yeah, okay. That's a good one.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to ask you about David Copperfield. Now, I had an issue with the casting of David Copperfield.
You had an issue?
Yeah.
Surely.
I'm a middle-aged man, and I like to see things done in the proper way.
Yeah.
Why did you cast people from the 21st century?
I know.
In that they should all have been Victorians, right?
They should have. And we did. To be fair, we did try that.
Yeah.
And we filmed. There's 10 minutes of footage of us. We dug up from various graveyards, not just in London, but in a kind of to open it up to the kind of the regions. We dug up from all around the country, and we got Victorian corpses and skeletons to take part, and it just didn't work. It was the pervasive immobility of all of the cast that sort of slightly rendered. There just wasn't energy to it.
Okay.
And I kind of wanted a bit of life, a bit of whatever.
Well, I'm disappointed
in
that decision. You messed around with a bit, David Copperfield. Did you think about doing a scene where David Copperfield goes and meets Shrek and they live together? And that would have been quite good in the middle. Just they go and he goes and hangs out with Shrek.
For no reason.
Yeah. You messed around with it. Why not put Shrek in?
Just Dora. I think I must go and visit Shrek. And then
go have an adventure.
Yeah.
And then back to...
Well, again, to be fair, we did film. but that was, again, with the corpses. So
right.
Shrek and... there is Shrek and corpses. And there's a pervasive sense of just green to all of the bodies involved.
It's very good, David Copperfield. Well done.
Thank you very much.
You won a Writers Guild Award.
Yes.
I was there. I saw...
Were you?
I saw something. Well, my wife won an award...
Did she?
So I watched her win an award, and then I watched you win an award.
Thank you very much. I couldn't go because we were still... Because my wife has various sort of... autoimmune kind of thing. So we've been very, very careful.
Right.
And it was the very start of... it's fine. You don't have to wear masks anymore. It's fine.
Yeah.
If you've got COVID, actually... And you're unwell, you don't have to feel unwell. You don't have to... just don't say you're unwell... if you're very ill, you don't have to believe you're very ill. It was just the start of that, and I kind of felt a bit nervous of...
Fair enough, it's only the writer's good. Paul Chuckle was there.
Oh, right.
So, you could have met Paul Chuckle. He could have gone out laughing. Your wife could have gone out laughing.
Yeah.
Got to balance it off.
Do you know, in The Death of Stalin,
when
they move Stalin's corpse around, you can hear Paul Whitehouse going, to me. Yeah.
Well, they're very influential.
I remember the last time we did this
and
you asked me an emergency question, which was, do you think Stalin could suck his own cock?
I did, yeah.
And as I went home, I thought, I know what I should have said.
which was,
he probably can, but he wouldn't. He would get someone else to suck it for him in case it was poisoned.
I tell you what, we'll edit that into the other. We'll edit that in. So we'll take that from this and we'll put it in. Do you think David Copperfield ever tried to suck his own cock?
Well, I mean, in the book there is Mr. Dick.
Yeah.
In the old curiosity shop there's a character called Dick Swiveller.
Right. Well, you've got to make that.
You've
got to make that.
Just
next.
That. Again, as a Netflix kind of 10 one-hour episode for I think 16 seasons,
yeah,
I think this
that would
one
be
would
good.
Be.
That would work very well.
With a kind of reality element as well for the young people. Kind of, will they, won't they? On an island. Dick Swiveller's Island. will they? The thing is, they've been married, but they don't know it. And then they reveal who's married to who. and whether they'll get on, but yeah. we won't let them get on because we'll stir it up a bit yeah. for sociological reasons, not for entertainment. And it'd be really fun to watch them psychologically get damaged.
Okay. Apart from that idea, are you planning to do any more of Dickens's work?
No, I think that's it.
Got it, yeah. Okay. You obviously got a lot. You loved the book, David Copperfield.
Yeah.
It's pretty clear
yeah.
from the stuff I've read.
It's quite a modern book. It's yeah. funny. It's, you open it, and the opening chapter is David being born. It's written in the first person, David being born, and just trying to kind of work out what things are, just trying to process light and sounds and people's faces and smells. And it's all written in sentences with words of one syllable and so on, as he's trying to just master just the world, really.
Yeah.
That's a very modern kind of, almost Joycean kind of approach. And this was a book written in, you know, 1850. It's like, yeah. yeah.
He wasn't very nice, Charles Dickens, though, was he, as a bloke? Does that matter?
Well, he had good bits and bad bits, yeah. I suppose. You know, he was very, you know, he was very into charity and social causes. But I think a lot, with a lot of these people who have a big public profile, privately, you know, there's a bit of Farage about him.
Yeah.
to use the term I'm now going to employ for anyone who's...
yeah.
God, I saw him. He was such a Farage. He really was.
Well, it was thanks to your film that I could answer one of the questions on The Chase when I was on The Chase.
Oh, fantastic.
Because they asked, it was what's the title of David Copperfield, the full title of it, which is the title of the film, isn't
it? Oh, right, The Personal History yeah. of David yeah. Copperfield. Very good.
So, you know.
There what did you win?
We won £150,000, so we won £50,000.
Oh, yeah. For a kitchen or for
yeah,
charity?
No, just spend it on coke and hookers. They said. Then they came back and said, "Oh, you meant to give that to charity." I went, "Oh,
oh fuck that." Somebody once told me a story about some newspaper was ringing up various people saying near Christmas time, you know, what is your wish for Christmas? And they rang up a bishop, the bishop of, you know, I'll say Leeds, but it's not the bishop of Leeds. I don't know where it was. And he said, "I'd like just a nice box of chocolates." And then when he read the paper, everyone else was going for world peace, an end to famine, and this bishop, just a nice box of chocolates. You know.
He's the only one who got what he asked for.
The only one who was being realistic, you yeah. know, if you want to be kind of, you know, Liz Truss about it. You want to absolutely, you know, sensible, you know. Got to live within your means. And wish within your means. Wish, you know, wish what's possible, not what's impossible, you dick. Yeah.
Oh, hold on, there was there... Oh, look, there's a couple... So there's a... I mean, we might have talked about you nearly being a priest before, but I didn't know that you nearly got into...
Well, I'm not
the...
nearly became a priest. Well, it's not like I kind of, like, accidentally... was nearly, you know, ordained by it. At one point, because I went to my second school was run by, it was a Jesuit, a Catholic Jesuit
yeah.
school. But there weren't that many Jesuits in it. And I suppose, you know, like anyone when they're 15 or 16, they get very, very, really into one thing. And I suddenly got quite religious in right. a kind of Catholic way. But that didn't last. I mean, it lasted about 8 months and I thought, stupid idea that is, you know.
But you could have been if you'd carried on. It could have been a priest. But you also nearly got into the treasury.
Into the treasury. Yes, I sat at university. I didn't quite know what I wanted to, because I think secretly I wanted to do comedy. But yeah. I just thought, you can't. How do you apply for that?
So this before you were a producer, obviously.
Yes. So this was like while I was still an undergraduate, and right. I thought, well, I'll apply for the civil service exam, which they do, and I got through all the layers of it until the final interview at the Treasury. And they said, in the end, they thought I probably wouldn't take it seriously. And they were absolutely right. Because I came that close to coming up with the poll tax for everyone. And, yeah.
That'd be, again, can you see an alternative? You know, because it's sort of weird, isn't it, that things happen and chance things
yeah.
happen. And if you'd gone that way, you could be prime minister now.
I could have been prime minister, yeah. I could have been chief secretary of the cabinet or yeah. something. Yeah, I could have been sending out an email saying, "Hey, we're going to have a party later in the week because we've all been working really, really hard. Bring a bottle." Yeah. But that sadly, that didn't happen.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do you think, I know a few people have asked you about this, and this is a question you get asked quite a lot, but do you think the thick of it and the way that it, you know, the way it made politicians and on all the civil service look, do you think it actually encouraged people to behave like that? Do you think it had a sort of, or do you think it was, do you think it was a reflection of what was happening, or do you think it sort of affected politics?
I don't know. I mean, it always disturbs me to read that certain people getting into politics now see Malcolm Tucker as a kind of role model.
Yeah.
Because when you analyse any episode of The Thick of It, it's basically something minor happens. Malcolm comes in, tries to sort it out and makes it 10 times worse, leaves blaming everyone else. I mean, that's fundamentally any episode. So, you know, he's not really a role model.
And yet Dominic Cummings is sort of super Malcolm, though, isn't he? Isn't he sort of a
weird kind of intellectual Malcolm, you know, that deliberately maverick kind of stir things up a bit.
Yeah.
And then things don't go well, and they go, why is that? And it was because you just try to stir things up a bit, and that usually doesn't work. In a highly rule-governed organisation. I don't know. I mean, I've had various... Well, look, various politicians or ex-politicians have said to me, well, you know, there's lots of people in politics who do a lot of good, to which my answer is, of course, you know, but that wouldn't make an entertaining show, just seeing someone come in and just work hard and, you know. But I've also had people come up to me and say, like in the opening episode of The Thick of It, they have to come up with a policy at the back of a car. They've got 45 minutes. They've got to come up with something that, you know, doesn't cost much but sounds good. And I've had various politicians come up to me and say, I've been in the back of that car.
Nice. You know?
And that's been, you know, the eye-opener when we were researching The Thick of It was just how little time people have to decide anything and how kind of improvised an awful lot of it is, how they're just lurching from one day to another, just trying to get through it. And that, so a lot of politics now is very just reacting to the bad headlines from the week before and trying to do something about it.
And how long do you think, I mean, this podcast isn't going to go out for a while. Do you think, Boris, I mean, like, in the ones we're doing in January, we're saying, do you think by the time this goes out, Boris Johnson will still be Prime Minister?
So when is this going out?
This will be out in quite a few weeks now. So, yeah, maybe April or May.
Interesting because I heard today, i.e. if you're listening, well, you could be listening anytime, end of near two-thirds of the way through March, that the police are now having direct interviews with some of the suspects in the Partygate. So they're taking it one stage further.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're being very fastidious in their work, aren't they? They're really taking their time.
Well done.
Yeah. It's nice to see them.
Well done, the police, for your studious efforts into trying to find out who went to the party from the photographs that you've been given of not terribly well-known, very anonymous-looking people that no one, you know, could identify at all. Yes. So it may well reach the stage.
Will it matter, though? I mean, because it's taken so long as well.
I know.
It just get to the point where we go, yeah, he was there. Okay, well, now we're on.
I mean, that is the kind of frightening thing about how the news cycle works now, which is just if you've heard something for about 5 or 6 days, then irrespective of how that event concluded, you just think it's all over. So, yeah, the party thing. We were so annoyed with the party thing, but that was so 3 months ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know? And I think politicians do that a lot. They do a lot of that kind of, look, we've been through this many, many times, so I'm not going to go into this again. Well, why not? Because, yeah, we may have been through it many, many times, but we haven't actually got to the bottom of it yet. So we are allowed to persist in interrogating you about this until we get to an answer. But it's easy to go, I mean, you've asked me this 3 times before, and, you know, I've avoided it then, and I think... I think you can see that, you know, that this matter is now behind us.
But the only time they ever go is if they choose to, if they say, okay.
Yes.
They've got to have some shame.
That's what's changed now, this idea. I mean, even Matt Hancock is now seen as like some golden example of political integrity because he went because there was a photo of him breaching the guidelines, you know, and he immediately went. And that was the last... Ever since then, it's been a kind of, you know, we make up the rules, and if we don't want to go, what can you do about it?
Yeah.
And I think it was interesting before Russia invaded Ukraine, before that was, like, quite rightly dominating the news, we were almost on the point where it was interesting to see whether actually Johnson would have had to go, despite his kind of trying to bluster out and stick with it.
Yeah.
And having a huge majority. It would have been interesting to see whether, in the end, the force of public opinion was such, the disgust was such that his position was untenable. I don't think now that's going to happen because there's so much else going on.
But then all the oligarch stuff has come out and that's still, you know, yeah. There's literally nothing.
Yeah.
You know,
and then he said that the Ukrainians fighting for their own independence is like people voting for Brexit,
yeah.
Which makes, you know, the 48% of people who didn't vote for Brexit makes them quisling, supine, treacherous, freedom haters, including Liz Truss, who voted for Remain, Sajid Javid, who voted for Remain.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's offensive to everyone, but, you know.
Yeah.
And the Ukrainian people who would quite like to be in the EU.
Yeah, I know.
There we go. Never mind. It sort of feels like we've. Where did the point change where politicians were no longer culpable for anything they did? But like comedians. It seems like comedians will.
I think it was
say things and make jokes about things and be in more trouble than.
I think it was Donald Trump saying before he was elected, saying, "I could shoot someone in the face in Fifth Avenue and still get elected." And then get elected. I think that's the point where everything changed.
Yeah.
And we're now, in the UK, we are taking that as an example. You know, politicians are going, well, if he can do it, I mean, I don't see why. So we've had politicians, you know, at one point, we had someone in the House of Commons standing up and saying about the trade agreement or something, someone from the government standing up saying, yes, we are breaking international law, but only in a limited and specific way. As if somehow, you know, if you were stopped by the police for speeding and you said, yes, I am speeding, but only in a very, only in this road. So in a very limited and specific, you know, I will slow down when I go round the corner, trust me. If they go, oh, yeah, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. No, I don't see a problem there. Yeah. But I think that, for me, that's the point where things changed.
Yeah. Do you think we can pull it back? Do you think people...
No.
You don't?
No.
I don't know if we can.
No, I don't think we can. I think once these things happen, it's like inventing nuclear weapons. You can't uninvent them. You know, when you start saying, just elect any old nonsense and say anything, because, you know, nobody's going to believe, you know, what they say if you say, no, that's not true. You know, you've reached a point, you can't, it's very difficult to undo that, I think.
Well, I guess, you know, World War II, the pendulum swung back the other way after the Nazis had been defeated and things were kind of nice again for a little while.
For a little while, yes. So but I think
it has to get a bit worse.
Yeah.
And quite a lot of people have to die. And then it'll swing back and then we'll maybe be reasonable people again.
Well, yes. Yes, there comes a point in every conversation where you have to bring up the Nazis. But what I'd say there is, I don't think they were, you know, when they said, here are, I mean, it was very clear what they were going to do because Hitler wrote it down in a book.
Yeah.
And then they went, I'm not saying, therefore, they were very honest and but I think we're in a different situation here where you're now allowed to believe anything you want to believe. You don't have to be swayed by evidence or fact or science.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Science and evidence and fact are just one part of this complex jigsaw of life that we're all going through, and emotions and feelings and perception and persuadability are all part of it now, I think.
But eventually, surely the people who are using facts and, you know, science,
yeah,
if you have a society, that will be better than the, you know, like in the Middle Ages, people believed a whole load of shit.
Yes.
And, you know, time passed and they stopped believing those things, most of them.
Yes.
You know, and it is a bit like that, you know, like the fact that some people believe the Earth's flat now. again. Yes,
but again, you're sort of predicating the argument on the assumption that there will be lots and lots of time in which this thing can be turned around. But if there isn't lots and lots of time because of what they're believing now, if time is actually running out, then, I mean, you may choose to believe that we do have lots and lots of time. But I'm of the opinion, I can't prove it, that if we don't change things, we won't have much time.
Yeah.
But if we don't have much time, then, waiting for the pendulum to swing back the other way may be a little bit whistling in the wind.
Okay. It's quite quite depressing.
I know, it is quite bleak, isn't it? This is like some sort of Beckett play. Two of us up on this stage just going, well, when will it end? How will it end?
But I know you're sort of interested. I think I've heard you might be doing something about social media as your next project. Uh-huh. But the internet, it should be. I mean, obviously, any system of information can include lies, and books books can be full of lies.
Absolutely,
But you'd sort of feel the internet should bring the world together. It should make it should be able to. I've got people I talk to in Russia via Instagram or whatever who might listen to this podcast or whatever, and you can have a conversation with them.
No,
and
it's brilliant.
You'd think that that would bring the world together and make people think we're all getting screwed over by the people at the top.
Anything is as good as or as bad as the people that use it. So the internet is huge.
Yeah.
It's global. And therefore, it encompasses all that's good about, humanity, but also all that's bad about it. And the question is, is which way will we allow it to go? I mean, it is a fundamental battle between between right and wrong and good and evil. But in individual kind of cases, but the cumulative effect, we just don't know. It's every way we turn, this conversation is getting bleaker and bleaker.
It is,
no, I am an optimist. I'll just forget all that. It'll be fine. It'll be absolutely fine. I think we will get our asses together. We will sort it out. We'll come up with a plan. I think Biden will win another 4 years. The Republican Party will hang their heads in shame. Climate change will become an acceptable thing and we'll sort it out. There'll be peace talks and everything. It'll be absolutely fine.
Okay, good. Yeah. I feel better now you've said that.
Yeah.
And I believe you. So what are you able to talk about your next projects or is it still...
It's not secret. It's just I'm still in the process of thinking about, where it starts and where it's going. I mean, I have a rough idea of what it's going to be about, but I think until we're a bit further into the process of it, anything I say now will change in 2 months and whatever. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I won't ask you any more about that.
No, don't. I'm sorry. Sorry to be very evasive.
No, it's okay.
Sorry to be bleak and evasive.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. We all came. We're having a lovely time. Talking about M&M men, weren't we?
And then they all went. Can we do more of that stuff?
Let's talk about that. We'll go into that. We'll see if we can find something in here.
Okay.
let me see. Okay, I've never asked this question before. I don't even know what it is. What's your favourite drink? Hold on. If you found out that it was actually made out of wasp urine and always had been, would it still be your favourite and would you carry on drinking it? What is your favourite drink?
Well, I'm from Glasgow and actually wasp urine... Fizzy wasp urine is
a thing.
A thing you can only get in Glasgow.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. So that would be.
You would keep drinking.
I'd keep drinking that. Yeah.
I wonder how much urine you can get out of a wasp. Yeah. How many wasps do you need to make a glass of wasp urine?
You'd need several nests. I think. Yeah. And a massive hammer. I mean, a mallet. A mallet. Now, let's not fuck about. Yeah. A massive pile driver.
The wasps are because the bees do all the honey stuff, right?
Yeah. What do wasps do?
They don't do anything. They've got all the. They dress up. They walk the walk, but they can't talk.
They can't talk the talk. Yeah.
They can't. They must be jealous of the bees. I think my daughter told me that wasps do something that helps the bees. Anyone know about that? They're like bees. They're bees helpers. They do something kill things or something.
They just clean the hive when the bees are out. I've got all the wax out and stuff. You can start. Yeah,
I think they do something to the flowers. I think.
And then do they? The wasps.
Yeah, they piss up.
The piss on them.
And that piss makes
piss them up, and then the bees go, is that wasp piss I smell? I must go over and have a closer look. Oh, it is wasp piss. But by the time they've done that, the pollen's gone on the bees' legs, and that's how nature works. I think David Attenborough said all that.
Yeah, okay, next. What happened to Lazarus the second time he died? Because he died once.
Yes.
Brought back to life.
Yes.
Is he then alive forever, or does he then die again?
No, I think he died with a look of shock and disappointment on his face.
Do you think, or did he think, it's all right, Jesus will be long in a minute to get...
Well, exactly. I think he got lots of people round. I think he had some illness that was, like, fatal. And he got all his relatives and family around, and he just went... Hang on a minute, just you watch. He's been given the last rites, and he's going, okay, just hang on a second. Just and then gone.
And you don't know, do you? Well, unless it goes to heaven.
And the thing was, as soon as he died, everyone in the room laughed. They just went, ha, it didn't work. Yeah. One trick pony.
But it's good. That's the thing with Jesus. A lot of the miracles, they're good for a bit, aren't they?
They're good for a bit, and then... Yeah.
And, like, I feel...
Apart from the water into wine, that would be... that's a real money.
Well, only did it once.
He did it once, yes.
You know, you could do that all the time. Yeah. And, like, he cured...
Or other flavours and drinks.
He could
water into wasp's piss, for example. That's in some of the Gnostic Gospels.
He had the ability... If you had the ability to...
No, fine, in the Dead Sea Scrolls, it's... He actually turned water into wasp's piss. Yes.
He could do that.
Yeah.
If you had the ability to cure leprosy, wouldn't you spend your whole life going around curing leprosy?
Yeah.
He did, I think, 13 lepers or something.
Yeah.
You should know. You've studied it. He did, less than 20 lepers.
Yes.
I mean, that seems rude.
Yes. And it's not big enough to be a kind of, you know, a scientific kind of... for research purposes, it's not a big enough
number
pool
no.
to get any kind of information from us. Lazy, actually.
Lazy. I mean, I would.
Well, not lazy. Sloppy.
Just do some more.
Sloppy.
Just cure leprosy. You're the son of God. Just get rid of it. Say, Dad, let's get rid of leprosy.
Fish becoming bread and stuff, or whatever. You know, it's all that about. You know. There's supermarkets. We don't need someone actually going, Luke, have another fish. There's a Tesco's and, you know, that's it's easy, that stuff. We've got, you know, Trollerman to do all that.
I wanted to ask you this. I've got this one written down especially for you. What is the most surprising thing that person that has ever leapt out at you?
Leapt out at me?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Anything leapt out at you? Anything leaping out at you now?
No, an assassin leapt out at me. Yeah. I don't think I've ever been leapt out of.
We'll make sure someone listening to this, if you see our man...
Oh, no. I'm not going to spend the rest of my life kind of going, oh, hang on a minute. I haven't been in this room before. What happens if I go, oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
Just for the rest of my life, you know.
It'd be a shame. I was just at the traffic lights, the pedestrian crossing in Leicester Square. I just had my sandwich, and I was standing next to a man, and he looked at me and said, I just want to say you're my hero, which is quite nice, isn't it? And then he walked into the road, and I said, watch out, there's a bicycle coming, and I stopped him being run over. So I felt, I don't know whether he...
Oh, wait, that's demonstrating what a hero you are.
Well, I suddenly thought, I didn't feel like I was a hero, and then I saved his life, so I sort of feel... Yeah, maybe
I was coming here, I saw the Batman up outside, and I was thinking, well, first of all, what is the Batman about? I mean, fundamentally, I can imagine someone with a superpower and the Marvel stuff. I get all that, but I don't... He's a wealthy man living in a dirty city going after odd criminals for a laugh.
Yeah.
But time and time again, you know, whenever they reboot the Batman or the Batman or Batman.
I mean, Batman usually, now he's the Batman.
He's
usually Batman.
That's
the difference.
I haven't seen the film.
I haven't seen it, but he's the Batman.
Does he say, hi, I'm the Batman?
Yeah.
You know, just so you don't confuse me with Batman.
Yeah.
I'm the Batman. And I was then thinking, as I turned the corner to come, I was thinking, who would be the British equivalent? Who's a wealthy individual? And I was thinking of Jacob Rees-Mogg would be our Bruce Wayne, I think, in a way. Yeah. That's as far as it went. And then I arrived and I thought,
I think we can work that. If you were offered millions to direct a superhero movie, would you do it? Or are you, do you want to... Because that's what often happens, isn't it? A director has successful films and then people come to them with their... Or do you want to just do your own ideas?
I want to do it, but I also know too much about what's happened to directors who've taken on these films and then... especially if they're only just started, you know, they become, they're known for an indie hit or something like that, and then they get offered whatever.
Yeah.
You know, The Flash or, you know, Egomaniac or whatever. I don't know. The Venomous Turd. And, you know. The Turd. The Turd. The Turd. I'm The Turd.
That's definitely Jacob Rees-Mogg in that role.
What's your superpower? I just, I make ghosts poo.
There's always got to be a poo, hasn't there?
And I know that they have a terrible time, and two-thirds of the way through the process, the film is taken from them and is completed by the studio. So I just would find that awful beyond imagining.
But you've also, I mean, it must be, because if you're a showrunner, as you are on all these shows, it's a massively prestigious... role, and obviously we've seen in show business that a lot of people let that kind of power go to their heads. And
absolutely.
And you seem to be unchanged.
Well, I try not to. I suppose it can. There is, I think being in that role or being a director on set, there is a power thing going on, which is why you hear all these terrible stories about how abusive people can be on set if they have that kind of control over someone. So it's important to surround yourself with people who, you know, you work with alongside and you're respectful of each other. I do remember when I was doing we were doing Veep and we were walking back for lunch and one of the background artists, extras, but you call them background artists, just went, "Hey, Armando." This was in Baltimore, and I turned around and I went, "Yeah." He went, "I fucked your mom." And I went, "I'm sorry." "I fucked your mom. I hear you're British. You like cursing." And I was so flabbergasted by this that, and what I should have said was, "I'm a showrunner for this production and I would like you offset." But I was so kind of flabbergasted, I just walked away trying to work out, because it was so wrong, you know. I mean, you wouldn't show that to anyone, let alone anyone who is officially your boss. But also, it doesn't work. It's not a cursing thing. It's a weird kind of, you know. And so I was sitting at lunch... and it does say, you know, in your contract as a showrunner for HBO, you can have people killed, you know, if that is what it takes to get the artistic. Well, I was so much, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus was opposite me, and I told her this story, and she just looked and then laughed and laughed and laughed. She just thought, that is so out of order that it's actually very funny that it's sort of, you know, it's like if I just suddenly poured, I don't know, kind of hot coffee over your face all of a sudden for no reason, expecting to get a laugh.
You know? I think you get a laugh.
You know, but the first AD, the first assistant director came in and went, "What's his name? I'll get him for you. What's his name? He's off the show." And I thought, no, I can't do that. That's just, and I just let it lie. And then I then told this. We then won an award at some some LA non televised but LA kind of thing for Veep. And I told this story and got a laugh. And then Bryan Cranston won an award for Breaking Bad. And up on stage in front of a whole auditorium, he just turned to me and went, "Armando, I fucked your mom."
Around a bit. That's all I can say about it. It's good, you know, it's nice. Nice to hear she had fun. It's really, you should have promoted that. That's what he was hoping for. The guy, the supporting, if he just said, You're now the star of this.
I love it. I love it. You're going to be the face of this next episode. You're going to be in Times Square. You're going to be all over. You're a superstar. Barry Gibbons in Fuck Your Mums. You know. 2, 3, 4, 5.
Oh,
we're going to have a big franchise.
That is brilliant. That is brilliant.
Hello, Fuck Your Mum. Yes. Yes, he's in a meeting at the moment. Yes. Is this about Fuck Your Mum? Yes. Yes, he's very busy, but... Oh, you've got an idea for another one. Yeah.
Could be like the... Yeah. It's in... Oh, it doesn't matter. I can't think of his name. Doesn't matter.
No, go on.
No, it's... I can't think of the name of the bloke from... it's going to take me so long to get round to this. I can't think of the name or what he does.
We must see this today.
Who's the bloke in The Cobbler that I'm obsessed with? Adam Sandler. Uh-huh. There's a bloke in all of his films who says something. I've forgotten what it is. I think it's Rob Schneider.
We can edit this. This can all be edited.
What does he say? You can do it.
You can do it.
He could be... Right, wait. Oh, I've... Hey, you know, you're saying that thing about the your mum guy. He could be in, like...
You said that to... You asked the audience for help.
No.
To get this information.
You know, I've forgotten his name again. What's Adam? Yeah. What's his name? Yeah. T-shirts. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Fuck your mum.
Fuck your mum.
Yeah.
I think Armando, I fucked your mum. I think that's what it's called. It's just the Armando that makes
there
it
you
great.
Are.
Armando. Not even Mr. Iannucci.
Not even. No.
Were you not tempted just to say, if you just said, Dad?
No, honestly, I'd lost all power of speech and thought. It was just so... It was so... It broke so many conventions, let alone rules. You know.
Oh, dear. Good. Well, we cannot...
Anyway, he's in prison now. I reported him for verbal assault.
It's incredible.
And he's now in jail. And it's America, so he's in jail for 35 years.
His third strike.
We're actually...
Executed.
Ironically, he is being fucked.
Look, it's
dressed as a mom.
It's always fantastic talking to you. Thank you so much for coming along and especially telling us that story. It's made up for the world ending.
I know.
Oh, no, I brought it up again.
We can cut all that bit down.
We'll cut that bit out and we'll just have them fuck your mum.
Yeah.
Got a title for this episode. It's all good. So, good luck with the new series of
Thank you very much.
Which I'm very much looking forward to. And whatever else you're about to do, I'm sure will be fantastic.
Thank you very much.
And everyone should buy Pandemonium. It's fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Armando Iannucci!
Thank you! Thank you very much. Thank you.
We'll be back next week with Rosie Holt. You have been listening to Rahulastapo with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Armando Iannucci. The music is by Scant Regard. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. I'm also indebted to Chris Evans. Not that one, or that one, or that one, or any of the other ones. It's the Go Faster Strike one, of course. Thank you very much to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre for looking after us, all the crew, and everyone at Acast, who are very nice as well. I also have to thank and name the Kickstarter reward backers, who this week are Dave Schofield, David O'Connor from BIMM, or B-I-M-M, I'm not sure which, The Scruff with the Cat, Neil Barkley, Rosa Jennings O'Connor, Keelan Flynn, Debbie Wythe, Paul Cadle, Ben Taylor, Not Required, James Horn, Luce Howard, Ivor Fran, Kevin Lindsay, Gordon Stephen, Pariak Kaminsky, Timothy, the artist formerly known as Tip Flaps McGinty, Alan Rolfe, Christopher Ellis, Karen Bickley, John Garrett, Matt Butler, Jan Geira, you got named a lot of times there, my friend, Andrew Dalton, Sean Edwards, Oliver O'Shea, Tony Deacon, Scott Rice Snow, Sean Howe, Darren Hancock, JD, Kylie Burns, James McBride, Venkat Kalati. Thank you very much. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. go to richtain.com/gigs and you can find out all about who's coming up in future episodes of Rahala Sapa. We're doing the Edinburgh Fringe in August for the first 14 days, so look out for us there as well. But come and see us live if you can, and do tell your friends about the podcast. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to RichHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.